How fitting to find you working in dung. It is no wonder you stink. That's the best you'll ever be, a smelly bastard.
The young woman spat out the last word with contempt. I know, you've told me, but I've got work to do. He did his best to sound calm. Kevin didn't know why she had the ability to unnerve him. The history of her various attacks on him was long and shameful. After each of her efforts, the proper reply or better way to defend himself would spring to mind. Too late. Always after the bruise or humiliation was done. Maybe it was her beauty. Even he, who had every reason to wish her ill, cannot deny her beauty. At 16 summers, she was growing prettier by the day. The entire village adored her. She knew it. The entire village hated him, and she loved it. I know you've come here for some reason. I wonder what it could be. He tried to embarrass her into leaving as he struggled with heavy sacks of grain. Fine grain dust filtered out and stuck to the sweat on his neck. He did his best to be calm. If he let her see how it bothered him, it would only get worse.
Are you trying to be clever with me?
She challenged. He thought he might avoid the worst of the situation if he ignored her. She became frustrated by his attempt. She could not accept any hints of his competence in anything. He was the bastard stable hand. Everyone knew it. Constance, he said with attempted care, I have to get these sacks off the wagon and stored in the barn before Goodman McGregor leaves for his farm. Master Banoff said I have to stack them straighter than a dwarven line. If I don't, I'll hear from him and Banoff. As soon as he said it, he realized his mistake. He had given her the perfect opportunity to make his already miserable day worse.
Why? How hard will they box you if they think you're dawdling?
She giggled. He was continually amazed at how she could change her tone from a hissing viper to that of a charming maid. I don't know and I really don't want to find out, so please, I need to finish this. He hefted the next sack of grain and tried to square it on the top of the last. As he set it down, the dust could be seen in the rays of sunlight sneaking through the cracks of the stable.
Please? My, aren't we being nice today? I'll tell you what. If you say you're sorry and bow to me, I won't tell them how you have been talking with me and forgetting your chores. No, wait. Say you're sorry and curtsy to me. Then I won't tell.
Curtsy? I'll not do it. I have 16 summers and so do you. Isn't it time we get over this?
Are you sure you won't do it? Are you that eager to anger Banoff and feel Gunter's fist? I think you will. All you have to do is say you're very sorry for bothering me, curtsy like a lady, and I'll not tell. It is easy. You put one foot behind the other and bend like so.
She demonstrated how easy it was. Despite his dislike for her, he could not deny she presented a pleasant view.
Come on, Kevin. It is easier than a beating.
Her voice was playful. If I do, will you really not tell? He tried not to let his voice betray how hopeful he was. She would just use his hope against him.
I told you I wouldn't. Now just pretend you have a skirt on and do it.
Kevin knew that Master Banoff would not make the beating easy on him. He never did. Kevin could suffer this humiliation. He had suffered worse. Yes, he had suffered worse, he argued with himself. But those were forced upon him. He did not have to choose them. Mentally, he held his nose, put one foot behind the other, lifted the skirt that was not there, and curtsied. I'm sorry, Constance, for bothering you. Will you forgive me?
Of course I will. All you had to do was ask.
With that, she turned around and skipped out of the barn. Her girlish bounce showed her womanly features more than if she had walked off like the adult she was becoming. He wondered if she would tell. He never knew how she would react. Sometimes she would lie, other times not. But he unloaded the 50 sacks of grain. The last 10 of them had to be put in the loft. That was the worst part. Climbing the ladder with a sack weighing 3 stone, the thin leather on his feet let him know how thin the rungs of the ladder were. The loft. He tried to think of it as his sanctuary. Above the stables of the inn was where he and his mother slept. He knew he shouldn't complain. Everyone told him so. His mother frequently reminded him how they had no other place to go. Kevin was sure other towns had inns with pots that needed scrubbing and customers who needed to grope. But, as bad as Village Donnell had been to them, there was no guarantee the next town would be better. Banoff frequently reminded Kevin how lucky he was. He had a dry place to lay his head and good food for his belly if he worked. Banoff was a large man, bald on the top of his head with just a few hairs reaching over to meet the thin patch on the other side. He crossed the apron strings in front and tied them so tightly that his belly looked to be swallowing the strings from the outside. It was hard to decide if Banoff's wife, Mistress Bitta was better or worse. She simply did not see Kevin. She did not ignore him. Ignoring takes conscious effort to overlook that which one does not want to see. Mistress Bitta was far past that. She simply did not know or care about Kevin. She allowed the barmaids and his mother to give him plates of food, but she would see right through him. He was not worthy of her. Kevin did not have time to rest after the last sack was carried across the large stable floor. He heard the voices of Master Banoff and Goodman McGregor. After Banoff saw the farmer off, he entered the stable. "Well, boy, looks like you moved the grain without spilling it. Did you put it in the loft like I told you?" "Yes, sir," Kevin replied. He did not know why Banoff wanted some of the sacks in the loft. There was plenty of room in the empty stalls, and when they were needed, Kevin would have to haul them down the awkward ladder. But Kevin knew better than to protest. The less he said, the less of a reason Banoff had to cuff him on the head for not knowing his place. "I've got nothing for you until the guests finish supper. Then you'll help your mother clean the pots. Watch for folks coming or leaving this evening. I'll not have any of my guests waiting for their horse." He said the last in a menacing tone. "No, sir, I wouldn't let that happen," he replied. He was hoping there would be no more instructions. Time of his own did not come often. "Be off, then, but I warn you, you be here to earn your keep after supper." Banoff, like many big men, liked to step close to emphasize the importance of their words. Kevin walked out of the dusty stable quickly. In truth, he did not have any idea of how to spend the afternoon. It was a fine day. The heat of summer had given way to a slight breeze that took away the effects of the sun. Kevin did not have friends. The only two he ever made, Father Sean and Aaron, had moved away. The other young men of Village Donnell were too busy to socialize. The distance between himself and the good folk of his age was not the real reason he was not friends with them. The real reason, he inwardly sighed, was his unknown father. Though no one save his mother knew anything about his father, they all knew that Kevin was a bastard. His mother either wouldn't talk or couldn't remember. Being astute, he did not press the issue. Kevin knew his beginning was not a source of joy to her. As he walked the tidy, well-kept village, Kevin thought of his plight. Kevin reasoned that the good folk knew he had a decent mind. Still, they wanted nothing from him. Adults whisked their children away from him. Shopkeepers would not let him in. Even the priests barred him from the small temple at the edge of town. The Book of the Word had no forgiveness for him. Fornication was a sin. It was not an accident. He knew, and he had been told countless times, that his mother purposely turned away from the Creator and spread her legs. For that, she and her sin child would not be able to receive the ministrations of the priest. Because of his mother, the Creator was not for him. Frequently, the priest would roam the village, talking with the good folk and bestowing their blessings. Whenever the white-robed men would see him, they would make a sign warding against sin. As he walked through town, he remembered fondly the one priest who had looked beyond his curse. From the first time he saw the man with the skinny frame and kindly eyes, Kevin instantly knew that the priest was different. Father Sean was his name. Kevin had 6 summers when the priest came to his village. He was one of the few adults who had ever shown him compassion. Father Sean had given Kevin the greatest gift he ever received. A book. At first, Kevin was simply happy to have something, anything of his own. In time, remarkably little time, according to Father Sean, Kevin had learned to read. Father Sean let him see other books. Some even had pictures. On the page and in his mind's eye, he saw elves, dwarves, witches, and even dragons. Kevin devoured them all with the eagerness of a starving man breaking his fast. None, though, were as good as that first book, The Magic Stick. It was nothing more than a child's tale about magic and impossible monsters. The day Father Sean had gently placed it in Kevin's hand was one of the few of Kevin's life he could call good. "Kevin, please have this. When I woke this morn, I found it on my table. My door was still latched, and I slept light. I do not know how or who, but I know of no one in this village more deserving than you. I only ask if the rightful owner finds it and wishes it returned, you must give it to him." Nervously, Kevin asked how he will know who the proper owner would be. Father Sean tenderly opened the thick leather cover and pointed to 4 letters. IPLG. Kevin was amazed that the little marks were letters. Even now, years after Master Banoff had ripped up the book and thrown the pages in the dung heap, Kevin remembered every word of every page. He hated Master Banoff for that. Some wrongs cannot be forgiven. The Universal Church decreed the sin of his mother could never be cleansed. Kevin struggled with that every day. Mixed with that was his hatred of what the good folk wished for him. Even now he pushed himself because of the second gift Father Sean had given him. To replace his beloved, the magic stick, Father Sean gave Kevin his very own copy of the Book of the Word. Kevin took a chance and sat on a hitching post across from the bakery as he fondly remembered the exchange. He ignored the dignified bustle of the good folk as he buried himself in his memories. At the time, Kevin had earnestly tried to refuse Father Sean's gift. He had only 9 summers. Children, especially bastard children, were not supposed to have such a book. With gold-rimmed pages and silk ribbons for page markers, it was fine enough for a prince. Father Sean had simply used his warm smile and said, "Son, if I don't give it to you, I haven't learned its lessons well." That memory never failed to bring a lump to his throat. Perhaps it was that memory, or the one connected to it, the memory of Father Sean leaving Village Donnell. The rumor that the good folk gleefully spread was that Father Sean was misled by the confused ideas of the doddering Pope. The ancient Pope's belief that people's faith in the teachings of the one church grew stronger after they questioned it was seen as nonsense to the increasingly powerful bishops. The sound of giggling brought him out of his musings. He looked across the dusty lane to see Constance and 2 of her friends looking at him. His cheeks immediately flushed red. Whatever it was, it could not be good for him. He marveled at how they seemed to possess all the grace of elven queens. Did girls practice how to act? He wondered. They continued to giggle and whisper as they pointed in his direction. He saw one of them curtsy. Then all 3 dissolved in hysterics. When they had composed themselves, they marched across the lane to him.
"Hello, bastard boy,"
a girl named Christine cooed.
"Can you show us how ladylike you can be?"
"Constance, you said you wouldn't tell." Kevin tried to sound like he was an adult shaming a youngster.
"I said I wouldn't tell Master Bannell, and I didn't. But I wonder who else might be interested. Maybe Gunter?"
She had perfected the art of speaking as a sitter would to a child. Gunter Magson was a large boy whom most considered a man. His body had everything Kevin's did not. With blonde hair and blue eyes, the girls of marrying age swooned at the thought of him. His shoulders were broad and draped in heavy muscle. Gunter's father was a soldier who rarely came back to the village to see his family. Kevin knew that with the rumors of a coming war, Gunter would not see his father for a long time. But it was Gunter's dream to be a soldier. He usually practiced his soldiering on Kevin, who had the bruises to prove it. He did it for 2 reasons. He was bored, and he could. Kevin didn't wait to hear what else the girls had to say. He quickly turned and left. Whatever would come out of their mouths would end up causing Gunter to find him and beat him. Of course, the fact that the girls would look on would add shame to the pain. He came to the old blacksmith shop. Its doors were barred and the great forge behind the building was cold. There was no ringing of metal and no pumping of billows. The silence of the foundry echoed in his heart. He'd met his other friend, Aaron, here. Aaron Dunn came to the village with her father 6 summers past. Her mother had died in childbirth, which was perhaps why Aaron hadn't hated him as everyone else had. From his readings, he could describe her as a pixie. Her hair was kept short because her father did not know much about raising girls, and because long hair near a hot forge made even the toughest father wince at the possible tragedies. She was smaller than Kevin, and he was small for his age. But Master Dunn worked her harder than any apprentice in the village. When work was finished, he would leave her to her own wishes. Aaron had often worn boy clothes. At first, she was a curiosity to Kevin. With short hair and breeches and a long shirt, she had looked like a boy. She even liked to wrestle and chase. But as the years wore on, Kevin was glad she was a girl. They seldom had time for anything but work. When they could sneak away, they did everything together. They explored the woods near the town. Many things were discussed in those woods. On a few timid occasions, Kevin and Aaron spoke of the future and of getting older. With characteristic shyness and no one to guide them, they decided that their futures would be best spent together. Those plans were shattered when Aaron and her father moved away. The coming war with far-off Otani was going to demand a lot from the villages. At least that was the rumor that had reached his town. Master Dunn knew that if there was one thing the war effort would need, it was the skill of a blacksmith. There was coin to be made smithing for those who relish battle. But Master Dunn had no wish to fill his purse that way. When the army needed a smith, that smith became property of the army. It was not a good life. The fact that Master Dunn did not prohibit his daughter from playing with Kevin put the man into the very small category of good people Kevin knew. He did not say much to Kevin, but he always had a smile and a hello for him. Both were genuine. When the soldiers had come for him, the good folk of Village Donald watched in silence. Though easily bigger than any of the soldiers, they had not put up a fight. Kevin remembered watching and wishing Master Dunn would take one of his hammers and smash the heads of the soldiers. Kevin had silently screamed as he watched Master Dunn pack up Aaron and his tools and go with the soldiers. That memory had not faded.